uncontrollable rage for no apparent reason. My hands are all scarred from punching my fists through glass. That calls it PTSD. Some vets held their exes hostage during their standoff with the police till finally they ate the shotgun. Me, I'm on my way to Needle Park.
Thank you. sensation. This is Sensation's Fix behind us right now. Music is painting in the air from Fragments of Light. Sonny Chirac doing Like Voices of Sleeping Birds from his 1987 guitar. Funkadelic did The Song is Familiar from Let's Take It to the Stage. And Lou Reed, my nominee for most underrated Lou Reed song, Love Makes You Feel, from his self-titled debut from 1972. Hey, thanks for listening, everybody. This is Freeform Radio, WFMU in East Orange, WMFU in Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM. Online at WFMU.org. I'm Scott, looking forward to seeing you next week. Stay tuned. Hardy White's Miracle Nutrition is coming right your way. Bye-bye.
What do you do when the show runs long on the Miracle Nutrition Show? What do you do when Hardy White's Miracle Nutrition runs long? Oh, I'll tell you. Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. And when the show runs long, all you do is cut off the intro. Oh, my friends, I'm so glad to be with you. Today, I would like to tell you a thought that I'm having right now before I forget. It has nothing to do with the rest of the show, but it's just something that popped into my head, and I think if it's a good idea, and this one happens to be an idea for an art project, and I'm just giving it away. It's a sound project, and here it is. I've been listening to a lot of videos of the late, great voice announcer and radio person Ernie Anderson, and he is the father of Paul Thomas Anderson, the filmmaker. And Ernie Anderson was the voice of ABC, and he did The Love Boat, like that. Now, and everything else in that time period, like late 70s, early 80s. There are lots of tapes of outtakes of Ernie Anderson, because he'd be very colorful between these takes, and it would take him a little while. And there are TV appearances, like on David Letterman. And during these, Ernie Anderson would often have to move out of the way the copious amount of phlegm that was one of the secret ingredients to his signature sound, because cigarettes should get some sort of residual for what they gave to Ernie Anderson, besides terminal cancer, whatever. They gave him this magnificent smoker's resonance. And it was because of this. I don't know physiologically how it works, but sometimes the phlegm works with you, and it has this positive resonance where the phlegm, the sound waves moving it in the same direction that you want it to go. But then there's sometimes this pushback where the phlegm, you know, that video with that bridge where that feedback resonance, you know, and eventually collapses the bridge. Well, in voice acting and such and announcing, that's you clear your throat. So there's all this available sound archivable material of Ernie Anderson clearing phlegm out of the way. And I think just that, composited and collaged by an expert, would be beautiful. And if it's one of those things that popped into my head just before I went on the air, and you know how that is. Oh my gosh, there's something compelled. The radio is sitting there. And you have an idea, and you think, I have an idea for something that could be done with the sound of phlegm. And not just any. I mean, somebody whose voice is like it's like an instrument. What a cliche. It's more than that. It really is. And the instrument it's like is one of those cathedral organs, because they've got pipes. And I think on the very low pipes, they put in some kind of sticky, maybe okra syrup or something like that, something viscous. that creates little viscousy, saliva-esque bubbles within the lowest pipes of the organ. That's lovely. Oh, my goodness, the human voice. You know, my theme is a style of singing called sacred harp.
Harp.
Excuse me. I don't know what that was. Sacred harp singing. And the sacred harp is the rib cage. Why is it sacred? Because I think it's not legal to have a rib cage that isn't yours. It's all right to have your own. But when you have one just sitting around that you use, you know, what's that for? I use it instead of a marimba for some things. If you've seen old cartoons, you know that a human rib cage can be malleted, can be used as, can be percussed. And wonderful sounds created. And that's what the sacred harp is all about. I don't know why they call it that, but it's also called shape note singing. And I'm not going to go into a lecture about, I could give you a musical lecture that you wouldn't care about for hours, really. I could bore myself. And I do. That's how I fall asleep. I have this little thing I call my siesta podcast. And I'll just lay in bed real calm. And then I'll start talking about something that I'm interested in. Like, you know, did you ever think about these early Fatty Arbuckle silence? I'm not really interested in that, but it puts me to sleep. And I think it would others. Well, why don't you do it for real, Hardy? No, I don't want... I've had listeners pass away before, something peacefully. And I've always wondered, you know, were they listening to my show? I hope, was it the last thing? Because I always think you take it into eternity. And then I thought, oh, no. Uh-oh. Because in some of them I say things like, you know, I'm a psychopomp and I will take you into the afterlife. And I don't want to really participate in someone's self-created hellscape that they might have in their last moments of consciousness. Oh, bless you so much, the human mind. It's a mystery to all of us. And we all have one in our skulls. I always look at, you know what's so discouraging? If you've ever gotten one of those catalogs for school biology, there used to be a company called Carolina Biological. And so I'm looking for a skull, a human skull. And they go, oh, we have them. And, oh, and they're so pricey. And I think, it's worth more than I am. Like, I'm not going to sell my skull, but dang it. That's a little bit, I want to be worth more than my bones. And I wonder if there'll come a day like that. Our saint relics are interesting to me, and I'm going to speak more about that. This, if anything that I've said in the last few minutes is a segue, it's this one. It's the saint relic, the finger bones of people who lived in the past. Say, I wish I had that old nun's coccyx in a jar, because she was so lovely, and I think she performed a miracle. Because I remember that time she didn't hit me. And I don't know, I'm using someone else's childhood. Isn't that funny? I'm a scrappy Irish Catholic from the 50s. I'm not me. Oh, that's not me. That's not my experience. But oh, heck, you know, if you forget, you start, oh, I'm going to steal some George Carlin jokes. And you go, whoops, they're autobiographical. Now what? That's why it's dangerous to steal jokes. And also, if you're going to steal them, you got to read them first. Because some people will steal jokes, they'll go out on stage, they'll start delivering their joke, and they'll go, what the hey? So read it first before you know, go out and deliver it. I try to use that as a rule on the radio. And so before you say anything, say it somewhere else. It's hard to do when you're broadcasting. So I go ahead and say it, but I always have second thoughts. Oh, bless you. I'm going to save you today time and money.
Oh, you're going to trick me and it'll be any money and the herb time.
No, I wouldn't do that to you. I mean, real time and real money I'm going to save you, and I'm not going to ask for anything in return. No, I am giving you a free life hack. You say, well, it's not illegal to hack your own life. I didn't say it was. I just said maybe you don't know how to do it. You know, it's not illegal to take your own television apart, but that doesn't mean you're competent to do it. I'm going to help you with your life. Probably not. I'm just kidding. This is all for entertainment. So, pretend you're watching a cartoon or something. That always scares me. So as I was listening to the radio, and this fella told me to do X, Y, and Z. And I go, well, that's not very specific. Yeah, but then I went out and did X, Y, and Z. I don't even know what it is. Well, don't listen to me. Pretend it's you're flipping channels, and you can see it's clearly a cartoon. That's more helpful. I can see that once theater became very realistic, I cried danger. I went back in the past to do that. I said theater is best when somebody's wearing a mask and they're going around going, I'm a warrior, like that or something like that. That's very ancient, what I just did. But, you know, if you walk into a room, like what's this? I don't know if you've ever seen Vanya on 42nd Street, this Wallace Shawn, Andre Gregory nonsense. Was like, has the play started? What are you doing? You know, I don't know, where's it begin? I don't know, it's some kind of checkoff line or something. Where I know, like, this society is not theater. Because it can be, look at what, oh, the damage that Andy Kaufman did. A lot of young people don't know who that was. But, oh, my goodness. Oh, I wish I could tell you. He was a, oh, what the things that Andy Kaufman did. He was, if you weren't alive in the 70s or 80s, you might not know him. But he would pretend. And this just caused an uproar. It was crazy, the reaction. And what is going on? This guy's pretending. And then it got so wacky that he was on a mainstream popular sitcom. And it just got out of hand. It was a lot like the Orson Welles scare. And to this day, you cannot, in New Jersey, go on the radio. Like right now, I couldn't say, ladies and gentlemen, I have a news announcement. Like that, and then say something that isn't news. My gosh, it's against the law. Did you know that? Because of Orson Welles doing that you're not allowed to go on the radio like that, pretending to be the news and announcing something that is not true. I don't know whether you heard me. No, I think you can. They just said that because it was weird and people called in and thought they were being invaded by aliens. And now people go on the radio and they say, we're being invaded by aliens. We're being invaded by aliens. And it's fine. So, and people still panic, but I guess it's just people become accustomed to it. It's lovely. I love it. Anything you can acclimate yourself to anything. I time travel. So I would just like to say there, I can graph the tendency of people to want to stick themselves into extreme temperatures. So sometimes it's ice and sometimes it's hot boiling water. And they just go, I guess they just go back and forth like that. Sometimes they love to plunge themselves into anything that isn't body temperature. So I need to shock my system in to another state of feeling. And that's a beautiful thing to do. And usually there's a pill. But if you want to, I don't know where you get the ice for it. I always think of, I'd like to see somebody try to do it at a hotel. Because the bucket they give you is, if you were trying to fill the tub with that, I don't know how that would go. Besides, back in the day, I would think, back in the rock, when people were watching Rockford File or whatever, and you were filling a bathtub with ice at a hotel, I would think you've just murdered someone. And that you're putting the corpse on ice, and you're going to wait a couple days and act like they're still there alive. You see what I'm saying? You put their clothes on, and you pull your hat down over your face, and you go, oh, Mr. Rogers, you're... Not Rogers, that's a bad, I just traumatize you. Oh, Mr. Reynolds, just so you're still here.
Yes.
But really, Reynolds is dead in the bathtub on ice. But not nowadays. Now Reynolds is in there because he's a bro who needs invigorating, and so he's icing his stuff down. I was reading about, I'm not going to get into specifics because, well, first of all, I really am going to save you time and money in a minute and give you a life hack, but I am not going to avoid wonderful tidbits of information that crop up. All shows do them. You know, this is a segment, and then we shift. So this is a segment called Body Humor in the, it's like a 12th century. Japan. So the head guy is sitting around saying, I want some entertainment today. I'm tired of the heavy pantomime dances, and I want some light comedy pantomime dancing. And so this actor gets up and pulls up his robe and runs around the fire 10 times and then says, it's a very cold night. I must warm my scrotum. And then everybody laughed so much. And it was the beginning of a certain type of comedy theater. And I just think that's so funny because I've been watching some of the new Beavis and Butthead. And I go, this is so similar to traditional Japanese theater. And you can see parallels and patterns like that in the world, and it's very exciting. It is very exciting to make connections. Now, it can happen with any pattern, this aha moment. Some people get it when they do the crosswords. I got it. The answer is Nora or something like that. I'm trying to think of something that's always in the crossword. But this is achievable through playing games, the aha moment, through discovering, so doing your research or something. As I was looking in to old Three Stooges routines and the clam that comes out of the soup and that shoots clam juice at Curly. Do you know, as he's trying to eat it and he can't get the clam and the clam keeps coming up and squirting him with something. I don't know what it is. It depends. It's chowder. It's probably New England clam chowder, so some kind of creamy thing. And it's squirting right in his face. And he's so mad. But that gag, like how you do it physically by someone's under there sticking their hand up in the soup and everything. I mean, it isn't super easy. Like the soup's got to stay in the bowl. It isn't the easiest gag in the world. You know, what's its origin? Then you find out, and you go, oh, here, I see it was done here in vaudeville or whatever. And you go, aha, oh, God, you're kind of giddy with discovery. Now, this could happen with music, too. You know, I was in the music store, and I was going through albums. Jim Varney going through albums in the music store. I was going through albums in the music store, and I was into a particular type of music. And there it was. I saw an album that I didn't know that that artist had ever done. Like Jackie Byard's solo piano from 1969. Is it hard to find? You tell me. But something like that. And you go, whoa, feels, you know, you get kind of a rush. Now, what about this time and money thing? Well, I'm putting out there that the exciting aha moment that you get when all these other things happen, the excitement of seeing connections, of putting things together, of kind of figuring out, and you know it's ongoing because things change. You can't master the knowledge of something. It's ongoing. But there are an infinite amount of opportunities for your aha moments. Now, I would like to ask you if you are currently attending or have ever thought about going to some sort of like religious service, you know, whether it be a church, a temple. What are some other words for it? Some people call it a mosque or in those kind of temple, or something like that. You know, they say house of worship. But some people don't even worship in houses. So, woodland clearing could be it. You know, let's just say the congregation, really, it's really not the building anyway, right? If you've thought about congregating with people for spiritual reasons and there's dues, I'm going to save you money because you don't have to do that. And here's why. Because I believe that you can figure things out as much as you need to, you know, in an afternoon. And so that can't be. It's true. It's just maybe not a very satisfying answer, but I believe that it will, at the heart of it, be the answer that you are searching for. And it will give you an aha moment when you find it. Now, if I've already given you something, now that aha moment is going to dissipate the feeling of it. And you're going to lose it, and you're going to want to come back again. But you've already learned this thing. So you're going to assume that you don't know it anymore. And you go, but I need to go and relearn it, I guess. So what you're really searching for is that the feeling of knowing. Because the knowing may be false anyway. So I remember having a feeling of ecstasy when I found out that the universe was run by, what's his name? Not Michael Imperioli, but the other one. Or I don't know, something like something really specific. That's wrong. Well, I don't know if that's wrong. Any cast member of The Sopranos could be God. I don't know. If everything is possible, then anything is possible. Everything is possible, anything isn't. Nothing ever is or something. But listen to me. Say, well, I like it when I go with other people, like collecting with other people. Oh my goodness, have you tried bowling? There's so much you can do. You don't have to really involve your spirituality every time. You don't have to make it about your soul. You can just go to a club or something like that where you all have the same interests. I guarantee there's some people that get what they need at like a Comic-Con. Because really all you're looking for is sort of other people to accept you and to be in this group. Oh. And then you're more comfortable believing the same false things or something. Oh, they're nice people. I don't mind. Isn't that true, though? I wouldn't mind. See, that's why I think so. Oh, would you profess something you don't believe just to be in a group? Depends. Like it's an island, and they're the only people around, and they're going, well, you can join this group or not. And I go, well, you're the only people. And so I'm going to go ahead and say, yes. What's his name? Gulubasatabarison. Well, I'm going to learn to say his name and praise it. And you, whatever you need to do. But really what I'm doing is it's the bonds are with the people. And they're the ones that I want to be with. So I want to create some sort of circumstances. So are you saying quit your church and join a what? A country club? I think it depends. I don't know what you mean by country club, because I always thought it was funny that all kind of golf course places were called country clubs. Because when I think of country clubs, I think of like Mechanical Bulls and everything. And I know that's not a country club. That's a country club. I don't think they like the word club. I think a bar or something. That's a country bar, son. All right, a country bar, son. But listen, it really is a club. It's like a club instead of going to the club. I'm up at the club or I'm down at the club. It'd be a fun thing to have in your basement. Oh, there's a club in my basement. I live above it. For me, I wouldn't mind having I put that on anyway to stop the voices in my head and everything. So I wouldn't mind that. Have a train going by. I like a din. I wouldn't mind. I like a good din. I can tell. See, it's my aesthetic. I use it, I like it in my music, I like it in my voice. Sometimes you just want something droning on a bit. I wonder about things that, I've had this ongoing preoccupation, and I explored it last week with my piece, The Blue Envelope, The Blue File, The Blue, whatever you want to call it. The Blue, what was the third thing? Folder. And that is the half-listened-to thing. The thing that you don't need to pay full attention to. A thing that can wash over you. And I wonder about that. And I love it. I've been exploring it in music. And you can focus in on it. You can say, I'm going to really think that's the Ron Hicklin Singers. You know, because it's just going by as an advertisement or something now. But, you know, maybe I do deserve a break, Ron Hicklin and friends. Today, what's the break going to be? Well, it won't be from high cholesterol food, because I think that's what you're encouraging me to do. But there is a need things that don't necessarily command my attention or my emotions, and that's what I try to be for you. Say, Hardy, I notice when I listen to your show, I don't get all worked up. That's good. I'll say, I don't know, I don't remember anything. Oh, it's like hypnosis, except once you're under, I don't say anything. So it's no, there's no, making no suggestions. Isn't that nice? I wish that we all had that. I think if I lay dying, I would say, bring me your most loquacious, is that the right word? Talkative and boring hospice worker. Because with a nice voice, though, pleasant voice. I don't want, that wouldn't do it. That's not what I want. I want, and I'm used to that. Now, what's the, you've heard it actually in audio productions and things, is the mumble, the voices that you're not really supposed to hear in the background. And the ones I've participated in recording, some people say mutter, mutter, peanut butter. So if you were recording a crowd scene or something, or conversations at a restaurant, people might go mutter, mutter, peanut butter, mutter, mutter, peanut butter, mutter, 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 peanut butter, mutter, mutter, peanut butter. And it sounds like speech in the background, and it might sound like English speech. And we've talked about this before, is how other accents are perceived or languages are perceived by people that don't speak it. I heard this conversation in France. Someone said to a French person, when Americans want to do an impression of a French person, they go, what do French people do? And French person went, like that. Now they have YouTube. I heard this 20-some years ago, but now you can go on YouTube. People will demonstrate that. It's hilarious. Not really. But what I'm getting to is what these all are about, really, is where in your mouth you're talking, like what muscles you're using and things like this. And this is also, if you're interested in this sort of thing, the basis of impressions. You say, you look at these impressions, you go, how can this impressionist just do this great, accurate impression of this person? Because usually it's two-pronged, you know? What they do is they find the mouth shape, the way they hold their mouth that the person they're imitating says those words. Then they also use little inflections or vocal tics or habits that that person has. So you just kind of combine those with maybe things that they say often, and then you've got your impression. So I'd like to demonstrate that not by doing impressions, but by doing meta-impressions. Now, this is something that my friends and I discovered years ago, and we would try to guess what meta-impressions we were doing by doing the most minimalist, just a abstract sound of impression of a voice. So, for instance, John Wayne might, John Wayne impression, people go, you know, hey, partner, I'm John Wayne. So you stop saying words and just make the, you know, something like that. You might say, what was that, a little Jimmy Cagney or something? Nixon. Stuff like that. So you just, it's where you're making, I'm not a great impressionist. I'm just telling you that there's a distillation of the sound that you can, a distinctive sound of someone's voice that you can make that has no real meaning. Why would I want to do that? I don't know. It's something nice to notice. It will help you understand just the musicality of voices, because there might come a point where, you know, you can't understand meaning in things. You know, your brain might become damaged. Like, I don't want you to panic. Say, oh, I know what's going on. I no longer know what the sounds mean. But, you know, that is what a heck of a Johnny Carson impression. And he's so subtle. So that kind of thing. I can't do it. Oh, bless you. Oh, bless you if you're funny and clever. Sometimes it'll backfire if you don't know whether. So I'm good in impressions, but I can't tell whether people want to hear them. Oh, you're doomed. That's a thing, too. You got to find those special people that want to hear them. Now that we have YouTube, you can find. It's so easy to find your audience. You don't have to go look for them at parties. And my gosh, or even comedy clubs. You go, oh. I think that ought to be. I feel here's an opinion I'm having. I went to see an open mic comedy night, and bless all of them. Bless them for whatever. Oh my gosh, just being it's hard to be a human. But I was thinking, you know, now that they have YouTube, why don't you try your routine online? You know, you can hone it there. And you go, well, I need the laugh feedback. Evidently not. So what I'm saying is you just ought to go through that, get the comments, work through it in the comments section. Because I would love to be able, if there was a little, some blank pages at the end of your act where we could say some stuff. Because I love you. I want to help you. And that's the way I feel about it. I just, not all entertainers. Some I go, my goodness, I'm glad I paid to be here. This is amazing. But the skill, combination of skill and intellect there and just hard work, I really very much appreciate it. Then there's other experiences. Then there's some that are in between. Oh, those are good too. If I'm feeling something intensely, that's a win. But it's a terrible gamble if you're not fully in control of your art and you're just taking the risk that it's going to hit. What are you talking about? Well, I would really like to be an avant-garde performer where I could get in front of people and kind of just hit my face with a pie pan or something. You're being sarcastic. I'm not, though. I think it'd be fun, and I would love to be able to compose with really limited parameters live in front of people, because the way my brain works, I just can't plan very well. And it's very difficult for me to make something up ahead of time. That's just a lot of energy. I lose focus very quickly. So if you'd like say, you know, you're working on an act or you're perfecting anything. And I go, no, why? Do you have a gig? You know, give me a deadline and a genre. And then I'll go, pew. But otherwise, oh my gosh, I can't imagine just having something on hand like that. So improvisation is fantastic. You know, if I can compose something when I get there, that would be lovely. And I do that for most gigs, whether I tell the people or not. And the brief TV thing I did, I don't know whether I made it clear that I hadn't written anything. But and I did kind of when I got there. But it was after I drove out to to where it was being filmed. What do you call that? Set. It wasn't a set. What is it? Where were they? I don't know. I'm a novice. I haven't done much stuff like that. It's fun, though. I'm like you. I'm a little kid fan of TV and radio and television, and I would love to climb in it, just like Mike TV did on Willy Wonka. Everything worked out for him. And I'd like to climb in it in the 1970s and make, what are we doing, Rockford? There was a season of Rockford where he had like a little kid sidekick who's like 9. He's precocious. And he's like, I don't want to have to watch out for a kid.
Oh, I can watch out for myself, Rockford. Don't you worry about me.
And he could drive and everything. That's me. I'm going to be that. Rockford's Robin, kind of. But that's awfully young. Maybe I could do it a little older or something. When it's the kid gets too old, when they're pubescent, or as Johnny Carson would say, going through puberty, the kid's got to be little and precocious. Maybe even need to do it CGI and make it a talking baby. I don't know. I don't know what the work rules are now. Whether you can, back in the day, you could have little babies on sets and everything. All and throw them. I think the Three Stooges would just throw them around. But that was the 30s, you know. Things were a lot looser then, and I don't know whose baby it was or whatever. But all those scenes where they find a baby on the doorstep, I got the feeling the baby was sitting there all day in the Clegg lights. But that could be wrong. They might have been. You don't know the level of compassion in the past. Nowadays in show business, they're very compassionate, and they treat children with great dignity and respect. And we know that from documentaries. I don't need to be entertained that badly, really. And I'm not trying to shut down the entertainment business, but and I know it's a massive undertaking. It employs so many, really. It used to employ more people, but they also made more things. You look at these old TV shows, they would make many, 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 many episodes. And now they struggle to make a few, and you go, wait a couple of years, we're doing season 2. It's like, what are you all doing? Like, these things had full orchestras as soundtracks, and I don't really know what they do nowadays. It takes so long. I'm never going to see another. Doctor Who, it's like, we promise. Why is it a year between episodes? Well, we got to. And they film them so long ago, everybody's in them passed away anyway. Why is that guy still in it? And Bernard Crimmins or whatever, it's like, hey, I know he's dead. Why is he in this? And Dead Said Fred, right? And am I right? Am I right? I think I am. Bless anybody's ever had a hit novelty song. I wish I could have them on the show. Somebody's got their hand up. I had one. Did you? What was it? Oh, it was called The Little Old Lady Who Boogies. I don't know what it's called. If it's, I'm sure it's a lot like that. Monster Party. I bet there's a lot with monsters in them. Novelty ones. People like doing that. How do you know your novelty? That's another thing. Every time I go to the grocery store and go for ice cream, they got, let's say, novelty ice cream. I'd be appalled if that was my product. They go, wait, excuse me? Novelty? This is no novelty. This is an enduring traditional ice cream shape. That's what they say for the ice cream sandwich. Ice cream sandwich has been around longer than ice cream. They're calling it a novelty. Novelties like the ones that are shaped like a rocket ship or something like that. Don't put ice cream sandwiches in there. You're just thinking like anything that's on an ice cream truck is a novelty. I don't know how things work, y'all. And I do get upset about things on purpose because I love the feeling of then being not upset. So if I only get upset at trivial things, I very quickly realize, hey, that's nothing. And then we're done. So the big things do I get upset at? Oh, I think I'm a student of? Expecting the worst. So I know the big things. I do not get upset. I do get upset. I get profoundly, yes, but I do something about it. What? I do something, and then I delude myself into believing that that's somehow helpful. And I may get to the next stage. I don't know. I don't want your help getting there. Bless you. And I already have an organization that I'd like to give to. Thank you. I'll let you go from my doorstep now. If you come to my house, this doesn't happen anymore. They just don't go to your house anymore. I guess it's from the pandemic. But it's chased. I don't hardly get any visitors because the most of the ones I got were unsolicited door knockings. And someone will still do it. You know who does it? Oh, I know who does it. The internet companies will send fake linemen. So they'll send salesmen out in safety vests with like lanyards and sometimes even a hard hat. And I open the door because I think they need to get in the backyard to get to the lines. And they don't. And they'll start with like, have you seen, we've been doing some work around the neighborhood. Oh, yes, yes, I have. Oh, you need to come inside and check my toilets. So I don't, you know, I immediately get, and then it turns out it's a salesman. And they'll disguise like that. I wonder, they should disguise like your neighbor. They should just find out who your neighbor is and then go and like Impossible Mission Force and be, and they put some plastic mask on and there's a knock on the door and you go, oh, hey, Matt. And you open the door and you go, this is Matt. Hey, Matt, what are you doing? I didn't expect you. You want to come in? No, I just wanted to tell you about, do you currently have a mosquito protection service? And then they'll know it's not Matt. Sometimes they use your neighbor, says, I just came over from your neighbor's house. And they went along with the plan to buy this thing. Are you going to? Schools really don't come by because they wouldn't let children do that now. Because every house could breathe something on you. But that was true. That was always true. So I'm glad they don't let him. I think it was terrible. I felt really, really, really vulnerable when they would make you do that back in the day. That's okay. Part of our fundraiser is we're going to sell these inedible, fill in the blank, candy bars, turtle cluster candies, waxy turtle cluster candies in a box and just some kind of repulsive looking packaging too, and some kind of really unappealing box. Right? Oh, it's just kind of, it's a kind of a dark green, not a nice dark green, like a military green and pink and with white writing that says chocolata or something really gross. And then, you know, it's not enough to just sell them, like you run out of relatives quickly. And then they want you, they literally used to at least want you to peddle them door to door. Like a Victorian rag salesman, but you're a child, you're a little suburban child, and they go, okay, you got to go door to door, you know? And, oh, hello, I'm selling chocolates for something elementary school. And at least back in my, they had no compunction yelling at children. That anybody who would tell an adult to off, it would tell a child, usually, is the rule. And except that I was in no real emotional state to hear that from a get off my property. It hadn't come up before because I was a very accommodating, law-abiding child. And I never got on anybody's property, didn't want me there. So when they'd tell you, get off my property with your inedible chocolates, I mean, they were right. It was hard to argue with them. I wouldn't, you know, and then I would just turn it all inward. It was hard to, I was like, I agree with you. What am I supposed to do? Switch schools? You don't, kids. I know it gets worse than that. Hey, it gets worse, kids. But you got to be prepared. Oh my goodness. Stay strong. That's what I advise children. That's why I think those movies and everything where there's little kid heroes and the kids are strong and capable at a very young age are really good for kids to see, you know, because sometimes it's not fantasy. And I would really love for children to have some sort of, you know, at least idea of what to do and play. We used to do more play like that when I was like, well, we're on our own. There's no adults now. What do we do? You know, we better organize. And in the movies, they can do that too. You know, little resourceful kids and the cache of weapons and I don't know what else. Little kid village. They do better than you think, you know? All that Lord of the Flies stuff was propaganda, really. Because in reality, anytime that's near happened, everything is fine. You know, you figure it out. You get along with one another. What are you going to do?
Any size group, everybody will end up eventually killing one another unless there's some sort of authoritarian model.
I don't know. I don't think so. Bless you. I'm not sure. I've never run an organization or anything. I'm talking to you from complete and utter ignorance. Isn't it? It is wonderful and liberating to be a jester. And some kings are sensitive. That's why you won't be too accurate with your jesting with the king. Don't be accurate, you know, because if it hits too close to home, woo, even the jester has no immunity. And very few people really want to hear the honest truth about themselves. So what I'm the kind of jester, I like to think I'm an invisible jester who's not funny and quiet. That's how I see myself, at least. Oh, my goodness. I don't want to add to your burden. I would never do that to you consciously. I may sneak something into your luggage and then sneak it out on the other end and make you an inadvertent mule for some kind of idea I have. But listen, I would never, it wouldn't be something heavy. It would be some small insight or something that I stuck into your skull, and then I'd take it out later, maybe when you're not using your skull. And that, I think maybe when I was a little kid and went through pirate-liking phase, I think, and it was really maybe a skull-liking, I think I just wanted an excuse to look at skulls. And that's just maybe a memento mori, man contemplates himself sort of, right? Alas, poor York. I knew him, Horatio, by the way, in New York. I'm not trying to Google on it. I know he's just recently died, but I went ahead and posted a picture of myself and York on social media. And I wrote a long, touching thing about how he's a fellow infinite jest and everything like that, but it's true. Yeah. And I just dug him up. That's how I know. Because I just dug up his skull. Isn't that what's going on in Hamlet? I don't know. My goodness. You know how I am with theater. I don't go enough. And probably like that with urinating, too. Drink more water. All of you. You're not going enough is the problem. Someone said that to me. Someone in a service industry relationship. Right? Said to me, unsolicited one time, maybe we were talking about health. They said that they weren't real happy with the color of their urine. And, you know, I said, well, there's two things you could do. You could drink more water or get a darker toilet. And, but I didn't know what to say, you know, because A, I'm not a doctor. I think maybe I had told this person I was, but I mean, the reality is that I'm not. And a lot of people think I'm secretly. I used to kid when I first started on the radio that I was, you know, that you might think it's hard to know whether or not I'm secretly brilliant or anything. But now that I've been on so long, it's, you just can't fake anything. And that's terrifying to me because I really, really hoped that, you know, that the benefit of the doubt was there. And I go, maybe he's just pretending to be dumb. But now I'm thinking, I think maybe you're catching on. And I know a lot of people say that because they want to be self-deprecating or they want to be contradicted. They want you to say, no, you're not dumb or whatever. Don't talk that way about yourself. I do not think I'm dumb. you know? So don't worry about that. I am sufficiently self-deluded. Oh, my goodness. A lot of what I say is self-effacing because I probably think too highly of myself. Now, if I were to have real perspective, though, and just step back for a moment, not with the motivation of injuring myself, but just to take a nice, clear look at reality and myself vis-a-vis other thinking humans. And I am on the dumb side. But you know what? I avoid Nobel laureates. And I could probably go into any bar in America and have nothing but peers. Just all my intellectual peers are there, and you might be too. You don't know. So I thought, I don't know if I am or not. Oh, you don't want to know. You know, those are things that are not important too. When did they become? They became less important to me as I aged and saw others older than me aging and their brains changing. And I think that's when I had to really, you know, figure this whole thing out about, are you your memories, your thoughts, your fucking, you know, what is you? You know, what part of that is you? And when it's gone, are you not you, or what's going on there? And I came to something, and but now it doesn't bother me as much as it did when I was a young person. That was my intellect vis-a-vis others. At some point, you know, you don't, it feels bad to feel inferior or incapable or something like that. I just couldn't pay attention. Turned out to be my problem, but whatever. But there came a time when I realized that nothing interferes with my love or affection or compassion for people. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. I do far less judging than I think that other people do, and I don't think they're doing as much judging as I think they are. I think they're worried and they're searching sometimes, you know? And I think the people that do are kind of judgy about things are worried about their own hat, whether their own hat is in fashion. And so they might point and laugh at another's to get sort of test the waters about what's acceptable and what's mockable. And they don't want to be on the outside. So they want to figure out who the outsiders are. Oh, my goodness, we're all outsiders. Oh, we all are. We all stand alone at the gates when we come in, and we all stand alone at the gates when we exit. The entire universe is moving towards a scattered disassembly, towards something that's organized, and then it's going to dissipate again and maybe come back again, and we don't know. But everything is in a state of being assembled and falling apart. Oh, it's a beautiful thing. You're riding on the top of a fountain. Little piece of paper dancing on a fountain in a mall. It's a shopping mall in the 80s, and it's got one of those fountains in the middle. Or no, it's right in front of one of the anchor stores. And it's shooting up a rocket of water 8 feet in the air. And it's doing that kind of dancing waters thing. You can kind of hallucinate a person in there, and you go, I think I'm seeing somebody doing the shimmy shimmy dance in there. I'm looking at it, and I'm looking at this column of water that is never the same shape twice. Oh, and yet it's a column of water. It's a thing. It's there, but it is so obviously an infinite amount of shapes in succession. And I accept it. Now, will you accept time in your life as an infinite amount of shapes in succession? You are the beautiful water fountain of your existence. Now, once you know that and you know the sort of all the relative nature of the universe, you don't as much need a big structure to meet in. You know, now we can all go in different ways. And I would like to invite anybody who is interested in any kind of, you know, early cinema or what else? Experimental cinema. And then we can meet. And we can have the same donuts as the Methodists. And you can put, and, well, should I still make dues? Yeah, you can make dues because nothing that we will do is contingent on your spiritual awareness. You know? I think that the thing that demonstrates you're awake is just that you're looking for fulfillment in the patterns of just doing your daily life. The thing you want is right in front of you, all that mundane nonsense. How do you make it exquisite? How do you make these moments of my mundane drudgery, Hardy, this job, how do I infuse them with some meaning? How do I enlarge them? How do I make the rest of my life not feel like an obligation? And I would say, oh, good Lord, based on your articulate description of your desires, I think you're more than halfway there. I think you're the person to solve that one. That seems like you're real close. You know the problem. And so here we go. Oh, my friend. This microphone in front of me, what a blessing it is. And I doesn't smell like, oh, I'm really the only one who uses it here. It's my mic. And so it's like smelling your own breath, I guess. I can't tell whether it stinks. A lot of microphones do, even if they do something to them. It's just something I smell. Also, there's certain metals, you know, maybe it's just copper, but they react with human sweat. And then there's an odor. I have copper healthy balls and two solid copper balls that I put in my hand to stop it. Anyway, you roll them around and everything. I have some stainless steel ones. I have some plastic ones. They're fun, you know, and you can just kind of stim. So then, but the copper ones, you know, they react with something in your sweat to create stinky, sweaty penny smell. And so that's interesting to me. But it's me. That's my problem. It isn't the balls that smell. It's me. So, and I think that is a beautiful thing to have put on a shirt, maybe, or a bumper sticker. We love our cars so much. Put all your wisdom on there. If your wisdom can't be on a bumper sticker, then you're on the right track, maybe. I don't know. Bless you. Again, I don't know how you happened upon this show. You were looking, I was going through the dial, and honest to goodness, I was looking for Eddie Money, and then you said his name, and I thought, well, he's not going to say any money and not play any, and I got bad news. But I saved people, and maybe I was hoping to save you time, and I might have wasted it, but time really can't be wasted. Yes, it can. All right. It can. But now what I've given you is something relative. So this is wasted time, so now you'll know what not wasted time is. You can't start your painting until you have a blank canvas. So this guy sold me a blank canvas. Of course. That's how you start with original painting. I give you something. You do something with it. You know, that's the way it works. So I've created in you, if I've made you bored, then you'll have something to contrast your excitement with. If I've made you angry, then when you calm down, it'll be a beautiful relief. Just like people pay a lot of money to drink alcohol, when that's exactly how that damn stuff works. Because I just feel better to not be sick anymore, you know? So I don't feel bad. Maybe I'm like a cocktail. I'm like having a Manhattan, you know? Is it worth the headache? Maybe. I don't even know if I like this. Who knows? What is it? It's the bitters? It's not a cocktail if it doesn't have bitters. And I think it was Rachel Maddow who said, I don't usually get political, but she said, don't eat the garnish. And I remembered that. And I don't. To this day, I don't. Here's an exception. If you're tying a cherry stem in a knot with your tongue, you know I'm talking to you, Twin Peaks. All right, friends. Oh, my goodness. I have to go. I'm seeing that fellas over here is tapping his watch. Why are you tapping your watch? My watch fell in a glass of water last night like a damn 60s Timex ad. Isn't that weird? I took a sip of my water, and I thought, whoa, what's in it? It was my watch. That means something. You figure out what. Oh, I love you. I'm so devoted to you. You know that. You are listening to WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County in New York City, New York, and online, WFMU.org, worldwide, One Freeform Radio. Oh, my goodness. Thank you for joining me. I will see you again next week. I really do love you.
Twins' name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. 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 Twins' name was Ebony.
Mm-hmm.